Hey, this is Mike Bobbitt. I'm a guy who used to make things, and sometimes I still do. These days, I prefer making podcasts, and I have a new one called Soundtrack to My Life. On this podcast, I talk to different creative people about the music that shaped them. Sometimes the conversations are funny, and sometimes they're just kind of sweet.
I love that Pina Colada song. Yeah, I do.
Rihanna has had a huge impact on my songwriting.
I'm diving into the ocean, finding that one fish that has the toxins, and I'm just drinking those toxins all day.
Maybe they're saying, like, you should now go forth and rock. It's like a peace be with you situation.
I also have a playlist called F Jams. One in. To just in case.
We danced to a jazz version of My Favorite Things.
Soundtrack to My Life. It's available exclusive on Spotify. It's a exclusive. I'm going to try to make that word take off. It's a music plus talk show, meaning I can play songs in their entirety. So think of this as an interactive playlist with some of the coolest creative people I know, and you should know too. Soundtrack to My Life, a Spotify exclusive.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Not bad.
This is Great Lakes Confidential, and it's kind of a heavy topic today, but it's like a really interesting topic. But before we get into that, I want to lighten things up a bit with some good news in the Detroit area. So I'm sure you remember this because most people did. It was a devastating time for people in our area. Last September, Saunders stopped production of their Bumpy Cake.
Yes, they did. They did.
And you could hear like people collectively crying in the streets over this. This was a terrible time. It was a horrible time in history of Detroit. So a lot of people really upset. The reason why they stopped production was because the facility in Livonia that was baking the Bumpy Cake permanently closed.
The Hourys Bakery, yes.
Yeah. So they're closed up, they're done. The Bumpy Cake ceased to exist for a while. But the good news is the Bumpy Cake is coming back.
I mean, that's fantastic news. Round of applause for the Bumpy Cake. I do also a round of applause for all the local bakeries that kept the Bumpy Cake alive. Because a lot of local bakeries started making their own versions of the Bumpy Cake, which, you know, something like that. Something that's that iconic on this side of the state. I don't know, you know, how well it carries elsewhere, but it's a very iconic dessert here in Detroit. It's basically chocolate cake with big piped, thick piped layers of buttercream, and then another fudgy layer of icing put over the top of that. So that's why it's called Bumpy Cake, because you see the little bumps of the buttercream. So, you know, it's very iconic around here. People weren't going to live without it, so a lot of bakeries started making their own. And, you know, bravo to those people, the bakers who did that. You're the real heroes.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I kind of feel bad that, you know, now they're probably going to lose that business now that the original's coming back.
Well, hopefully they'll figure out a way to kind of make it work for all those bakeries too. But yeah, that's some good news because they're going to, I didn't see a date and there wasn't like they're not telling who the bakery is that's taking over just yet. So.
Oh, I wish it was Hourys again. Huh? That place. I wish it was Hourys again because that factory. I've worked near that factory in my day as a young man working in the warehouses and factories around Detroit, and you'd always just smell the sugar coming from that place. Like if you work close enough on like a summer day, where you got like your big dock doors open at your warehouse, you just smell that sugar roll in across And, you know, something to look forward to.
Yeah, that's not a good thing for me because I have a, I'm pretty sure I have a sugar, like an actual sugar addiction.
Yeah, and, you would have been dead. You would have been dead a long time ago.
I can't work near stuff like that. I have very little willpower, if we're being honest.
It would have been like one of those cartoons where, like, you know, somebody catches the whiff of the food and they just start floating, following it. That would be you, like, just floating right across, what's that? Is that Farmington Road? Yeah, be floating right across Farmington Road and cars, you know, like, slamming on their brakes and get out of the way as you're just blissfully floating across, smelling the sweet sugar coming from the Bumpy Cake Factory.
That's me. You should draw that for the, you should draw a picture of me floating over Farmington Road going towards the Bumpy Cake facility.
Oh, if I get time. That's something that'd make a good animation.
That would, yeah.
Save for Great Lakes Confidential, the movie.
Oh, right. Okay.
One more thing for you to do.
Sure, why not? Just add it to the list. So, speaking of the actual show, today's episode, so I think most of our listeners probably should know what the Underground Railroad was, but for those that don't, the Underground Railroad was a network of people who worked together to help freedom seekers escape slaveholding states in the South to states in the North and to Canada where slavery was illegal. It was a very dangerous journey. There are actually rewards for those who captured freedom seekers. According to NationalGeographic.com, to better their chances for survival, they would sometimes flee on Sundays because reward posters couldn't be printed until Monday to alert the public. Others would run during Christmas when slave owners wouldn't notice they were gone. They also mostly traveled at night. So that's what our show's about today, is the Underground Railroad. It's going to be a two-parter because there's a lot of information that I thought would be interesting to share. So obviously I knew about the Underground Railroad because when I was in school, and probably when you were in school too, we're not that far away in age here, but when we were in school, they spent a good portion of history classes talking about the Underground Railroad and slavery. What I didn't know was that Michigan has a lot to do with the Underground Railroad.
Yeah. I mean, we're right there. We're the border.
Yeah. So what would happen once a freedom seeker, and we're not going to call them slaves throughout this, just because, you know, there are some places where we do reference them by, you know, saying slaves, but I prefer to say freedom seeker. So once a freedom seeker was on their way, they would hide in attics or basements, crawl spaces, hidden wagon compartments, basically wherever they could find a place to hide. When it was time to move on to the next place, an agent or conductor would tell them where to go. So a conductor was the name of, that's what they called people that kind of helped.
The guide,
Yes, guide them and direct them. Assistant.
Person that would help hide them.
Yeah. So this is from, I found a PDF of some sort of old pamphlet of sorts, and it was called Michigan and the American Civil War. So on July 13th, 1787, Congress adopted what became known as the Northwest Ordinance that said slavery was forever banned in the Northwest Territory, a large region that eventually became Michigan and four other states. It should be noted that people living in the territory were allowed to keep slaves they already owned. In Michigan, slavery began after the arrival of the French in the 1600s. When the British arrived in 1761, they discovered Native American and African slaves. According to a 1782 census, there were 78 male and 101 female slaves living in Detroit during this time. That number declined after the British left in 1796. Only 15 African Americans lived in Detroit in 1805. It is unclear how many of them were slaves, but businessman Joseph Campau owned 10 at the time. We've talked about him a few different times. I didn't realize he was a slave owner.
Well, and he's still got a street named after him.
Still has a street named after him. Most Michiganders didn't own slaves or approve of slavery. In 1807, a Canadian living in Windsor demanded his two escaped slaves be returned to him. Judge Augustus Woodward denied the request, stating that slavery did not exist in the Michigan Territory and that every man coming into the territory is by law of the land of free man. Let me say that again.
Okay.
That every man coming into the territory is by law of the land a free man.
Bravo, Augustus.
In 1830, a U.S. census showed 32 slaves living in the Michigan Territory, but the number quickly diminished. Michiganders began calling for its abolition. Around the time the Civil War started, Michiganders started helping freedom seekers through the Underground Railroad. Some stayed in Michigan where they were free people, while others crossed the Detroit River into Canada. Detroit played a huge role in the Underground Railroad as it was one of the last stops before a freedom seeker made their way into Canada. Detroit's code name was Midnight. Code words and flags and lanterns used as symbols were ways freedom seekers and conductors could communicate without detection. I knew none of this.
No, well, I mean, I knew about Detroit being an important stop, being one of the final stops, you know, just because we're right there on the border. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure you'll get more into it too around some of the other towns around the Detroit area that were involved.
A little bit,
the Underground Railroad, and also Port Huron was a stop, wasn't it?
I believe there was an area in Port Huron, yes. I don't know that that's one that I touch on, though.
Okay.
I can't recall off the top of my head. There was so much information.
Yeah.
This is from DetroitHistorical.org. Seymour Finney was a prominent Detroit Underground Railroad conductor. As the owner of the Finney Hotel in downtown Detroit, he was able to aid the formerly enslaved by housing them in his nearby stable. One of most notable abolitionists in Detroit's network was George DeBaptiste. Born a free man in Virginia in 1814, he relocated to Detroit as an adult. A respected entrepreneur and business leader, he owned a barber shop and a bakery in Detroit before purchasing the steamship T. Whitney, which he used to secretly transport slaves from Detroit to Canada. DeBaptiste also formed a secret organization known as African American Mysteries, or Order of the Men of Oppression, which worked with the Underground Railroad in Detroit. Detroit's Second Baptist Church, Michigan's first Black congregation, was established in 1836 when 13 freed slaves split from the First Baptist Church. First located on Fort Street, the congregation moved in 1857 to its current location in Greektown. The church became a vital station on the Underground Railroad and for over 30 years housed an estimated 5,000 freedom seekers.
Wow.
Abolitionist leaders, including Frederick Douglass, Sojourner Truth, and John Brown, worked with Second Baptist. Members of the congregation founded two anti-slavery organizations, the Amherst Baptist Association and the Canadian Anti-Slavery Baptist Organization. Detroit was one of the most critical stops on the Underground Railroad because it was generally the final stop for achieving freedom. There are at least seven known paths that led freedom seekers from various points in Michigan to the Canadian shore, and it is estimated that 200 Underground Railroad stops existed throughout Michigan between the 1820s and 1865. The Underground Railroad ended in 1865 with the end of the Civil War and the 13th Amendment about abolishing slavery. There are Underground Railroad tours in Detroit if you are interested. The station house tour at First Congressional Church is hosted by the Underground Railroad Living Museum. This tour is a reenactment where guests will be transformed into passengers on the Underground Railroad and be led to freedom by a conductor. You can call 313-831-4080 for more information. City Tour Detroit is a walking tour where you can retrace the steps of former slaves. This tour includes a powerful reenactment by actors inside the Croghan Street Station. This tour is 3 hours long and it's only on select evenings in the summer. Advanced registration is required and you can get more information by visiting citytourdetroit.com. Detroit Historical Museum has the Doorway to Freedom exhibit, where visitors walk through Detroit's entire history as part of the Underground Railroad. One part of the exhibit allows visitors to literally walk the path to freedom on a trail. For more information, visit DetroitHistorical.org.
Very cool.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's very extensive throughout the area. I mean, I grew up in Farmington Hills, which if people don't know, that's, basically like just kitty corner northwest to Detroit, like 8 Mile and, Farmington Road area, mm-hmm. Orchard Lake Road. And it seemed like there were quite a few stops there, like buildings that would claim, like historical buildings that would claim to be stops on the Underground Railroad. And I was reading about it. I know I was telling you a bit about it when we were discussing this topic, that one of the reasons why Farmington was so big was because the heat was on in Detroit, so to speak. Like people knew that Detroit was a big crossing point for freedom seekers. And, a big hub for the Underground Railroad. So a lot of times it would be safer to stay just a little bit outside Detroit, like, spend some time, in the suburb, Farmington Hills right there, Farmington Hills, and, then make your run from it from there instead of spending time in the city and possibly attracting the attention of bounty hunters.
Yeah. Would you go on, 3 hours is a long time, but would you go on a tour like that actually takes you on the, like, a literal path? Like, would you feel comfortable doing that?
I mean, it'd be interesting to see. I'm sure it's not going to be like the Polar Express, but, it's just, it would be very interesting to see it, just to see, the hardship and what people actually had to go through just to, get back their freedom.
Yeah. I don't know if I could handle it. Like, I don't know. I don't, like, emotionally, I don't know that I could, like, I have a book and I can't remember the name of it, but it's something like my daddy didn't want me talking about slavery, something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a collection of stories from slaves. And I have a hard time reading it because I just can't hear stories about people who have been chased down in a field and beaten with leather straps, right. And
it's horrific.
It is terrible. And so I've tried to read it a couple different times, and I'll get like a couple pages and then I have to stop reading because I just can't. It's a lot to take in. So I don't know if I could actually physically go on a tour like that, if I would become way too emotional.
Right. You would.
Yeah. and the thing is, like, I would love to do that. Like, I love stuff like that. But I'm also an empath, and I just don't know if I could put myself through that. And that's
no, I don't really, think you could.
That sounds really crappy to say, considering what they went through to,
right,
to get freedom. But I don't know that I could do it.
Right. No, you might need a more lighthearted summer adventure.
Yeah, you're probably right. So that's it for this episode. I realize it's very short, but I just wanted to kind of sum up a little bit about the Underground Railroad in Michigan, because the next week's episode, I want to touch on, there's 34 confirmed spots in Michigan that were linked to the Underground Railroad. We're going to talk about 24 of them. That's a lot.
Yeah.
But there's also, like, what's interesting that I found as I was reading and researching all of this, there is two new spots that were just kind of discovered last year that they're not confirmed yet. They're not verified. So I'm not going to talk about them, but they're still finding places, as people are doing whatever it is that they're doing out there in the world. They're finding like clues to, in various locations that it's like, oh, this might be another spot that was used in the Underground Railroad. So it's quite interesting. Like I said before, it's a lot of information. So we're just we're skimming the surface of it here. But if anybody is interested in doing more research or going on any of those tours or anything, I would highly recommend it. I don't know if I can do it, but maybe someday I'll give it a go.
Yeah.
So we'll wrap this one up then. And then next week, we're going to talk about the actual locations. So
all right.
If you guys are interested in trivia or just any sort of conversation with Great Lakes Confidential, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram. You can also email us at greatlakesconfidential@gmail.com. One of my favorite things is getting voicemails from our listeners, and you can leave a voicemail by calling 313-489-0739. Or you can just keep coming back and listening to us yammer on about random things that we've found interesting in the state. So, so we will talk to you guys next week.
Next week. See you then.
Be safe, watch for deer, and text us when you get home.
Bye-bye.
Bye.